Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootniblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero-G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, Blake and I are going to talk through a bunch of mailbag things that have been submitted by the great people of the Apples and Genos Discord server, plus some people from Twitter, just an overall smorgasbord of fantasy hockey strategy talk for you tonight. Let's get it. Now, of course, I have your friend and my best friend, the man of the weekend, an absolute godsend, Blake Creamer, here with me. Blake, how are we feeling tonight?
Oh, damn. Okay. Yeah. You know what? That's not bad, Nate. For a first try, you get an A for effort, my man, right there. And yeah, I'm feeling good. You know, I just noticed that I'm actually on the left side of the screen now as opposed to the right side. So, you know, we did a barbarian handshake last episode, and I think we should probably do it again because I was aimed the wrong way. So, Nate, if you want to just get no, you got to go the other arm and then get to the forearm and then look in the eye and then sweet. That feels really good. Yeah, buddy, I'm doing well. It was a nice weekend. We were talking offline. The weather's pretty nice, so we got out with the kids. You ever notice, Nate, that you know during the week when you're not seeing your kids, you're at work and you're like, damn, I miss the kids. What are they doing? And then when you actually have time with them on the weekend, you're like, what the frick? Oh man, like these kids are nuts.
Bouncing off the walls. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love my kids, but damn, like, you know, what kids need is like a zip mouth. You know what I mean? I don't know. They just zip it, right? And then they can't. I don't know. That sounds inhumane. Anyways, how are you, man? I'm yammering on.
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, we got out of the house a little bit too, which was great for my kids as well. Less bouncing off the walls for sure. Always a nice attribute. Yeah, it's been pretty nice. It feels like I haven't seen the sun for the last month, and don't think you fully realize how much that weighs on you until the sun comes out and you're like, ah, this is what I've been missing in my life. So that was pretty nice. But Blake, I think we should jump right in. We got a full slate here of mailbag questions, so I want to get through the newsies as fast as humanly possible. We didn't actually talk about it, but I think I'll just jump in and we can talk through the newsies. How's that sound?
I'll allow it.
All right. So first up, we got Barrett Hayton going to play the first game out of the All-Star break, it sounds like. That's obviously good news for the Coyotes. You know, we obviously need to see where he's going to slot into the lineup. He's been out for a long time. Wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world if he, you know, got eased back into things. We saw that with Logan Couture this past week before the All-Star break where they kind of eased him in a little bit. But, I mean, who's really blocking him from taking back some of that line one power play one time that he did have? Yeah, Arizona only has a couple games this matchup, but they have a perfect schedule next week, so that's something to look out for. And Matt Dumba's coming back too for Arizona, so things are looking up a little bit over there. Hayton is obviously the most exciting one potentially for fantasy purposes, and you're going to get that perfect schedule next week to really give him a tryout. I'd prefer to see a game first and see how things are shaking out in the early going, but you know, we have the proof of concept from last year where he was absolutely lighting things up with Clayton Keller and Nick Schmaltz, and things haven't been going Arizona's way as of late, and I feel like they might be willing to try him out. So I'm cautiously optimistic that Barrett Hayton could be something of value for our fantasy teams this year yet. Evander Kane battling illness can miss game on Tuesday. That would mean Ryan McLeod would bump up, so that's something to monitor. Andrei Svechnikov still not ready with skating in a non-contact jersey. Apparently he's close, just not ready yet, but a chance he plays on the Canes' next game on Tuesday as well. Another superstar close to returning, Jack Hughes. Lindy Ruff said he's a lot closer than he was. He hasn't had a full practice, but I guess they'll evaluate after tomorrow. Might not be back this week, but probably next week if we had to wager a guess. one to watch very closely, obviously. He's going back in your lineups as soon as he's ready to go. Of these four, obviously some big names here. Interesting potential for streaming with Barrett Hayton. Anything sticking out to you there, Blake?
Yeah, just Barrett Hayton, really. Like you said, he wasn't really blowing the doors off at the beginning of the season. You know, there was a time where at the beginning where he wasn't scoring, but his metrics were good. And then he'd moved on to not scoring and his metrics were terrible. So, you know, but like you said, who's holding him back? Logan Cooley, Alex Kerfoot? No. All right. I actually added him in one spot. He was available in all nine of my leagues. Seven, because I'm in two dynasties. But yeah, I added him in one spot just because I have that matchup locked down. So I thought that was pretty good. I can set myself up for next week. But yeah, let's watch a game and see what happens.
For sure. All right, let's keep rolling. Alex Newhook, full participant in the Habs last practice. Could be good to go next game, barring any setbacks. That's probably your Sean Monahan replacement. Could potentially end up on the top power play for the Habs. I don't know if I honestly care, but there is that.
Coach, is there anyone less inspiring than Nick Suzuki? It's Alex Newhook, everybody. Yeah, all right. They got them both on the same team. All right, let's turn the TV off, everybody.
Yeah, I have no rebuttals for that, unfortunately. Yep. Coach Bednar had no update on Valerie Nichushkin. Said that Landeskog was going to meet up with the team latter part of the current road trip. What are your thoughts here, Blake? We talked about this a little bit before we got started here, but Landeskog has been skating with the team, but like definitely not actually anywhere close to real practice. So I kind of feel like this is probably just more of a team building thing. I mean, he's the captain of the team and he's been away from the team for huge chunks of the past couple of years. So I think it kind of makes sense that they just want him to be around the team. But do you feel like this is trending towards Landeskog actually returning in time for it to mean anything for our fantasy season?
I mean, it's just interesting at the very least. It has to, you know, perk your ears a little bit, right? Like, I know it's social media, I know it's Twitter, but why the hell would he even say that? Why would Bednar say that? Like, who cares if he's just traveling with the team because, you know, he wants to hang around with the team? Why would he say something? So that's just kind of where my head goes. Like, if I had to guess, I think there's a chance that Landeskog plays this season. But I'm not basing that on anything besides a gut feel. Right. But yeah, he mentioned he's traveling. I could see Landeskog getting in some games here. But yeah, what are you going to do? Like, you're going to go add Landeskog? No. Right. We have to hear a lot more information here. And yeah, it's just not forthcoming. So yeah, something to watch. It would be great if he came back. This guy's a beaver with cheese.
Absolutely. Let's keep rolling. Another Colorado note. Ivan Prosvetov was placed on waivers and actually cleared waivers today. Justice Annanen was called up from Colorado Eagles. He's been, I guess, okay down there. He's got 14 wins, 5 losses, .908 save percentage. Definitely nothing to write home about, but he has been a fairly highly touted prospect himself, so there is some interest there. If they decide to spell Georgiev a little bit more moving forward, that would be of some interest. Sean Monahan, we've got some practice lines here. Will play with Ehlers and Perfetti, as Rick Bonus previously mentioned, and it looks like he is going to take a power play one spot, at least for the first little bit. And guess what that means? That means Nick Ehlers on power play two, as has been ordained since the beginning of time. Mark Scheifele has been activated off IR, will return in the Jets next game. Is there anything more to say about Rick Bonus in the Jets here that we haven't already said, Blake?
You know what the thing that sucks is? You can't even dog the man because they're doing really well. Like, you know, I would love to just go all in on Rick Bonus and be like, what the hell are you doing, buddy? They're like second in the league or third, you know? So kudos to you, Rick Bonus. I mean, you suck for fantasy hockey, but obviously you know what you're doing. But Nikolaj Ehlers, damn. I mean, maybe just get him at least doing something useful. Get in the back, show him how to sharpen skates. I don't know. Maybe he could apprentice as like an equipment manager or something like that.
Maybe. Gary Bettman said at the All-Star game he'd be surprised if any of the players involved in the 2018 World Juniors case played for the rest of the season. Obviously, for fantasy purposes, the most important player there is Carter Hart, and what that means for the Flyers. Samuel Ersson has not had a good run as of late, but he was probably, you know, playing a bit too good for the last little bit, so maybe it's just some regression. Maybe he can kind of level his play out. The Flyers are still playing decently under the hood. I don't think they're, you know, just going to suddenly turn back into a pumpkin here. Don't think that's the case with this team. I think they're actually somewhat solid. So I do think that there are better times ahead for Ursa, and I'm not super scared of any of the other guys in their system really coming in and just taking a whole bunch of starts. He might get a little bit more of a 1A treatment than the like full-fledged like 90% starter that he had been, but I do think that Ursa still is a player that I'm interested in rostering if you need a 0G option. And lastly, Pyotr Kochetkov has been recalled from the AHL. It was basically just a conditioning stint down there over the All-Star break to get him into some action. Freddie Anderson has resumed skating, though. Do you have a take on the Carolina Hurricanes goaltending situation here, Blake, moving forward?
Yeah, it gets a little muddier, that's for sure. I am still a big fan of Kochetkov in the net there. But now that Anderson has resumed skating, it still doesn't mean anything, right? It's a one step closer, but I think I'm still riding Kochetkov. I think if it's between Kochetkov and Ranta, it's obviously Kochetkov. And then if Anderson gets back in, I don't know. I feel like Anderson could get the 1A, but I think it's going to be Kochetkov and not Ranta who gets that 1B. And what does that look like? Like, Anderson is dealing with a medical issue, which is a lot different than, you know, some of these injuries that players deal with on a regular basis, right? So I don't think they're just going to throw him in the deep end like, okay, you're a workhorse now. So I think Kochetkov will still have value. But yeah, then it becomes this three-headed goalie monster, and I don't know what they're going to do, but they sent Ranta down earlier. I think Kochetkov, his floor is pretty safe.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, a little bit of it too for me is like, are we sure that Frederik Andersen is good anymore? He had a 903 last year. He had an 894 in six games this year before all this stuff came up. Like, I'm just not convinced that Frederik Andersen is a good goalie anymore. He's 34 years old. Would it be shocking if he was kind of just past his prime at this point and Kochetkov is actually their best option? Yeah, it's definitely muddy, but I'm not really holding out hope that Anderson is going to save my season from, you know, a 0G perspective moving forward. All right, Blake, we got to turn it over and get into the mailbag. I'm pretty excited about this. We don't usually get an opportunity to, you know, deviate from our normal content here. So having this All-Star week where we've already talked about all the players, I'm not going to do puzzling players tomorrow because I've already did that. And there's, you know, six games last week. Is anybody really changing major perceptions based off those six games last week? I don't think so. So yeah, we're getting some opportunities here to kind of make our own way. And so I asked the Apples and Geos Discord server, and I also asked Twitter in general, if they had any questions, any kind of mailbag things for us to tackle here on the podcast. I did ask for some strategy focus. We got some player takes in here as well that people asked about, and that's fine. But definitely we've got some really fun strategy stuff in here that I'm dying to get into, because that's the part where I really feel like we have something to offer that you don't get in a lot of other places. So that's what I'm excited about. Let's dive in. First one from Kanban in the Discord server. What in the world is wrong with John Tavares? Will he turn a corner and get back to where he started the year, or is he cooked / at risk of being bumped off power play one if the Leafs decide to add at the deadline? I'll kick it to you first, Blake. Obviously, Tavares, a player that we've talked about a fair bit over the last little while. While the metrics have been pretty solid for Tavares, they've dipped a little bit in recent weeks, but he's still been pretty solid. And actually, I'm saying the wrong thing. And that must have been 2 weeks ago when I did my puzzling players that he had dipped right for a second. But the last five games, he's actually killing it.
Brought it back. Yeah.
Yeah. He's brought it back as of late. So is this just a classic case where we expect there's nothing wrong here? He's going to have it all back and he's going to start pumping the net again?
Giggity. Oh, that sounds awesome. Don't do that to net, JT. All right. I don't know where we're going with that. But I'm still not concerned. Obviously, like, we're talking fantasy hockey, which is, this is all luck based, to be honest. Like, you know, we are putting things on our side with these strategies, but at the end of the day, we can't sit here and be like, yep, Tavares is going to be fine. But I mean, the only thing to me that does knock Tavares off, like, my confidence in Tavares is if, person said, if they trade for someone at the deadline and they decide to bump Tavares off power play one. Tavares off power play one, I'm definitely concerned, right? Like, because he's not, that could happen even if they don't get someone, right? So I think Tavares definitely needs that power play one to get his production back to where it needs to be. But I mean, I know you're going to talk about the metrics here, Nate. These are stupid on the year. He's just ice cold. He has 1 point in his last 10 games, and it's a goal. I mean, and he's still on a 61-point pace. That power play is going to get going. He's in a slump, and I'm low-key excited about hockey starting up after the All-Star break because there were so many guys that were – you just have these little ticky-tack injuries, and I'm not saying that John Tavares has – I just call every John Jonathan that he has any injuries, but this time off is going to be good for Tavares. And I think he'll come back refreshed. If he was battling anything, he's had a full week off and a bit to get better. So I would estimate that he's going to come back firing and he's going to get back to business. So I'm not concerned about Tavares at all. I don't know where you're at with him because you get to watch him all the time there, Nate.
Yeah, I think there might have been something that was going on. You do see a little bit of a downtrend in his minutes for a little bit, and that was the part that had me the most concerned. It wasn't really anything under the hood, but there was a downtrend in minutes for a little while there. But as of late, it's come back, and it's come back in a big way. Now he's averaging close to 18.5, and that's including only 14.28 in the last game where they, just didn't kind of need him as much. But shots per 66th in the league, individual scoring chances 4 per 62nd, on ice numbers top 30 in both of those metrics that we like to look at. Corsi 4 per 60, scoring chances 4 per 60. On the season, he's top 20 in all the metrics we like to look at. Like, definitely really high ceiling if he can start to convert even at his normal paces. And honestly, I'm not really worried about him getting bumped off the power play one. There's been a lot of talk that Treliving might just decide to stand pat at the trade deadline this year and just put it back on the players and say, you know what, you guys got to figure it out yourselves. Like, this is the group. Figure it out. There's been a lot of talk to that effect around Toronto. And to some extent, I feel like where there's smoke, there's fire with Toronto, because nothing is a secret in Toronto for very long. So, yeah. That's kind of my thought at the moment. And like, I'm struggling to figure out who they would go out and add that would bump John Tavares, the captain of the team, off the top power play unit. I just don't think that player exists on the market right now. Not one that the Leafs could fit under the cap or anything anyway. So I'm pretty in on Tavares now, especially with this recent resurgence. I think that he makes for a pretty good buy low candidate actually at the moment. All right, let's keep rolling. Let's get to this question from C. Will. I suppose we'll find our answer here on whether Prozvatov gets claimed and by who. As we mentioned, Prozvatov did not get claimed today. But I'd like to ask you, certified beauticians, if you were the GM of a team in need of goaltending, do you take a shot on this young man? And what teams in particular do you think should go for it? Do you have any spots, Blake? Do you think Prozvatov is a zero-G savior for some team waiting out there?
Are we talking about fantasy or real hockey? Because
I'm saying real hockey at this point. Yeah.
To me, I mean, no. I mean, what have we seen from Prozvatov at this point? Nothing really. Like, I looked up this guy's statistics because it's not a player I'm super familiar with, because we haven't seen him very much, right? Georgiev is like he played the most games in the entire league. So his backup is getting jack squat. All right. And that's Prozvatov. So it was a surprising move, though, because I've heard some good things about this player. But yeah, I mean, is this goalie better than like David Riddick or Cam Talbot on LA? I don't know. Like, is he? I'm actually asking, like, I don't know, you know, but no one claimed him. So, I mean, these guys are professionals. I'm just in my basement with a microphone. So I don't think so. I think if he cleared, this is not a player that people are obviously very interested in at this point. He hasn't really proven himself to any degree. He didn't even play very well in the AHL. Right. In terms of his record, right? Like his record and his statistics, nothing to write home about. So this is just a player we need to see a lot more of. He's going to need to get the reins for maybe a bad team and kind of prove himself, like a la Charlie Lindgren or, you know, a player like that. But yeah, I don't think we'll see him in the league again this year. He'll probably finish the season in the AHL.
Yeah. It's not like he's exactly had a terrific season, .895 save percentage in 11 games played this year. Yeah, I mean, maybe you'd think that some of the teams that have been really struggling with goaltending, LA and New Jersey come to mind, would have taken a shot just to see. But, you know, they all have their own guys in their system that they're trying to develop, and you bring in a new guy and suddenly you got to try to find a spot for him and move other pieces around, and that affects your guy in the AHL and the amount of starts he's getting and what your plan for him this season was. I don't think it's that surprising, to be honest, that there wasn't a team that was desperate to have a guy who hasn't posted anything above a 900 in the last 4 years here. So let's keep rolling on. Siwo also asked if we can name the top three streamers with benefits so far this season. He asked for three players and three goaltenders. I came up with more than that. You did too, Blake. The guys I came up with, Brock Besser. I think everybody forgets that this guy was on waivers for a lot of different leagues at some point this season. Vincent Trocheck, another one that was out there. Frank Vetrano, pretty obvious one, and Trevor Moore. I think those are two guys that just finally got the minutes this year and really converted some of those rate stats into scoring and actually probably overperformed in terms of that. And then Owen Tippett comes to mind. Obviously, he's cooled off a little bit and had his bouts with the Torts hammer, but he's obviously produced as well. On the back end, Brock Faber, obviously, taken over basically everything, the reins to the entire back end of the Wild lineup. So that's one that comes to mind. And the goaltenders, Joey Decord, Connor Ingram have to be at the top of the list, but I think, like, Cam Talbot, for what he gave us, like, what was that, 2.5 months or so of just, like, elite-level goaltending before it all just disintegrated in front of our eyes. I think you have to shout him out as well. Who are your players, Blake?
Yeah, absolutely. First off, what leagues are you in where Vincent Trocheck wasn't drafted? Oh, my God, Nate. All right, you're on notice. All right, Vinny Tro drafted every time, all right, without fail. No, that's a good one. So I got Blake the Snake Coleman in here. Obviously, this guy's been amazing. That's been my best streamer with benefits all season. I picked him up for a great Calgary schedule. He went buck wild that week, and I never dropped him. I've had him for like 5 straight weeks now. So I love that. Shout out to Blake Coleman. How about Robert Thomas? This is a guy that you tweeted out at the beginning of the year. This guy needs to be on a roster. I talked about him on a buy low show way back in the day, and now I'm talking about him as a buy sell high, but he's on an 87-point pace. Damn, this guy was 25% rostered at one point. So Robert Thomas is a great one. Seth Jarvis, another one. I think we were both sort of in on, at least as a fantasy asset this season, right? He got top line, top power plays, having a nice little season. Mackenzie Weegar is a player I put in here as well. Obviously, you know, you've been burnt by Weegar in the past, and you have, you know, a lot of hatred, a lot of venom for this man. But, you know, he's giving us the season this season that he was supposed to have last season, right? Mackenzie Weegar, he's on a 49-point pace. Sheesh, with his usual ridiculous periffs. So, and he's had some power play one time during that as well. Not currently, but yeah, it's been a nice little season for Weegar. So I think you probably picked, no one was drafting him. And then, you know, on the same team, Yegor Sharangovich, all right, who's probably going to lose some value now that Kuzi is on that team, but, you know, it was a nice run while it lasted. And then I've got Eli Tolvanen on here as well, he's just been a streamer, a borderline streamer all season, right? He's a guy you can drop, but he's probably going to be there when you want to pick him up again. And he's doing stuff. He's a great bangers league guy, and he's got power play time, lots of shots, good metrics. So that's a good player. And then for goalies, I did put Stuart Skinner on here because he was drafted, obviously, but then he got dropped, didn't he?
Yep.
Like, Edmonton was playing like crap. I picked up Skinner in two spots when he was dropped, and I held him. And I had him through that whole run. I have him for that whole run. So that's excellent. And then UPL is another player who's a streamer with benefits. And we'll see how that goes, right? I'm still not sure what they're doing in Buffalo. Obviously, Devin Levi was sent down for conditioning during the All-Star break, but he's going to be called back up. So who the hell knows what they're doing in Buffalo? I hope they go with Levi because I've got him in a spot where I actually need some wins and I don't have UPL anywhere. But both great goalies should be on your 0G radar.
For sure. All right, let's keep rolling. Cheetos Fingers was wondering maybe some realistic players to try and target that would have with help with playoff scheduling for weeks 23 through 25. So if you missed it, we talked about the playoff schedules in the last episode that we released on Saturday morning here. So if you haven't checked that out, go back and check out episode 258 on that. And What I would say is when I go through, and I should mention, join the Apples and Geos Discord server, and you can take a look at the sheet that I've released that just really succinctly breaks down all the teams with the best and the worst schedules for your fantasy playoffs this year. But what I would say is there are some teams that I'm pretty interested in: Buffalo, Seattle, Vancouver, Edmonton. Vancouver's pretty hard to get anybody from because all their top guys are pretty well rostered at this point, and not really guys that I'm like, all they've been redlining pretty much all season, and maybe that continues and maybe you can buy high and not get burned on that, but I'm kind of looking for guys that I don't have to buy high and then just hope they stay unsustainably high this entire time. So didn't find anybody really from Vancouver, but from Buffalo, Seattle, Edmonton, I do think there are some guys. And then also Anaheim, because they do have they do show up in weeks 24-25, so if you're a team that's cruising towards a bye, then Anaheim does show up there. So Troy Terry from there is the obvious choice for me. I've talked about Troy Terry on the podcast a few times recently, and yeah, I'm just absolutely believing the talent. He's generating it on his own. They're finally like just being like, okay, this is our best player, we're gonna play him 20 plus minutes a night. I don't have any reason to believe that won't continue for the rest of the season at this point, and I think that Troy Terry is going to be really helpful for a lot of people rest of season. From the Oilers, I'm not sure that I want to really go out and pay up for any of the big names here, like Bouchard, Draisaitl, Hyman, obviously McDavid. Good luck trying to get McDavid off anybody. But Evander Kane, I do think, has some room to grow here. He hasn't had the greatest season so far, but when he's been healthy as of late, has been back in the top six and getting those minutes. I think he's just going to be valuable. I don't think he's going to make or break your season, but he's going to be a valuable piece. And if he can give you those off nights and those games played that you really need in the playoff schedule, then it's good to just have one more guy with that kind of schedule in your lineup. So if you can make like just a relatively equivalent trade for a guy like Evander Kane and just, yeah, basically get the bonus in terms of the schedule, that's what I'd be looking to do there. And then from Seattle, really, it's only Vince Dunn for me that I'm most interested in. I've mentioned it before, but Vince Dunn has kind of sustained what he did last year in a totally different way. Over the last four games that he's played here, he's first among all defensemen in shot attempts per 60. So he's really been firing the puck as of late. On the season, he's 33rd in shots per 60, so that's pretty solid. The on-ice metrics are really good. Overall, I think Vince Dunn has actually kind of taken a step this year in terms of his play driving, and that's kind of sustained these higher numbers. I don't know if he's going to continue on a 66-point pace like he is currently, but I definitely think that this is a very worthwhile fantasy defender, and he doesn't have that name recognition, so I do think he is still pretty attainable in trades. Jeff Skinner from Buffalo is one that I'm throwing out there. The minutes have come down a little bit from last year, under 17 and a half minutes on the season, but he's still pacing for 34 goals, 66 points, 12th in the league in shots per 60, 13th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. That's all still there. It's really just a matter of, will they lean on him a little bit more? Obviously, they haven't had to this year because they've actually gotten some pretty strong production from guys like JJ Paterka throughout this season. So maybe that won't be there, but even if he stays on this kind of like 34 goal, 66 point pace, that's still a valuable piece. And Buffalo has a really, really solid playoff schedule, so it's definitely one that you want to be checking out. They do have the most off nights of any team, tied for the most off nights of any team, weeks 23 through 25, and then also the crucial 24-25 weeks. And lastly, I thought about this one a lot, but I am going to throw Tage Thompson in here. I talked about this, I don't remember actually when it was, not that long ago, and how he's a really big boom or bust kind of play in my mind rest of season. Like maybe there's an underlying injury here that's kind of affecting things. The shot attempts are there, but the shots on goal are not there. It's kind of a weird situation. The individual scoring chances are not as high as they have been even in the past couple of years. Similar to Ovechkin in that regard, actually. And so that's obviously a little bit concerning, but I do believe that Tage Thompson is one of the elite talents of the league. It's really just about whether he can harness that through this crucial stretch. And I just want to bet on players that have that actual like league winning potential. And there are not that many players that have that. Tage Thompson has that. He has a terrific schedule. Even if he doesn't absolutely go off, as long as he's like halfway decent, he's not going to hurt you. And then you do have the chance that he just goes absolutely nuclear in this situation. He has upside that very few players across the league actually have. And, you know, it's 3 weeks. Like, a lot can happen in 3 weeks that hasn't happened all season long. And that can be the difference. And so I'm just kind of willing to bet on that. Some outliers are going to win people fantasy championships. Like, it's a very small time period that ultimately decides our leagues. And so I just want to bet on some players who actually have that league altering ability in that 1 week matchup where they just absolutely go off. I know you've got some of your own. Any thoughts on mine before you jump in here, Blake?
Yeah, no, I love it. I bought low on Tage Thompson in two spots here in my leagues. And one of them was for a playoff schedule when I thought I would make the playoffs in that league. And now it's kind of, I don't know, that's the one league where it's in jeopardy. But yeah, I mean, one thing I love about your picks and my picks too is you don't need to go for these top end guys. Obviously, Tage Thompson is, but not this year. But you want to go for guys that are a little bit under the radar, right? Guys that you could realistically get. And I think all your guys are realistic, right? You could get those guys. Like you said about Vince Dunn, obviously he's an elite defenseman, but he's not a big name, right? So if you throw out offers for Vince Dunn, his perceived value is different than his actual value, in my opinion. And I think with all these guys that you've selected, that's the case. So I think Skinner's a really nice one too. Like you said, if he keeps a 60 to 65 point pace, who cares? Like, that's still going to get you what you need out of Jeff Skinner, and you're not going to have to give up the farm to get him. So with that said, the guys I picked are in that same vein, right? Guys who I think you could actually get, right? And not sell the farm. Because like you said too, Nate, I don't want to sell high. I don't want to buy high. Like, that doesn't feel good. I will if I really feel like I have a great chance, but I still want to get some value, right? I want to blow up my team. So with that said, obviously Washington has a great schedule here during this time. I mean, weeks 23 to 25, they got 11 games, which is tops, and they've got five off nights, which is tops. So I like Washington a lot for the playoff schedule. You know, then they have some decent options, and it's headlined by Ovi, Big O, right? And he's playing like he's had an uptick in play recently, so that's nice. But I don't think he's all the way back. He might not be all the way back ever again. But again, it's like that Jeff Skinner situation. What if he plays at a 60-point pace or whatever and gets 30 goals? That's totally reasonable to me. And you're not going to have to give up that much to get Ovechkin. So, and he's the main option there in Washington who has the best schedule in that time. So I really like Ovechkin there. And then sticking with Washington, another guy who's been underachieving massively, John Carlson, right? Like in that Vince Dunn model, to me, this guy's actual value in fantasy is much higher than what he's being perceived as right now, right? He's had a very down year, but he's still elite. This guy's an elite player. Like Washington's had a down year offensively as is, right? So, and he's been a casualty of that, but you know, I like both those players and I'd be targeting both of them. And then, like you said about Seattle as well, like they got a great schedule. And I think there's a lot of options here that you might not even have to trade for. I added a player that I would legitimately trade for, and that's Joey Decord, right? And again, like this guy, yeah, he's had an amazing stretch, but Grubauer's back. So his number one spot is, to me, it's pretty locked down, but someone you could argue that it isn't, right? Grubauer's back now. Like there might be an opportunity to go out and get Joey Decord, who's a better than average goalie, who's getting a ton of starts on a team with an amazing playoff schedule. So I would definitely look there. And then Oliver Bjorkstrand, he might be on your waivers, honestly. So, you know, definitely check your waivers for Oliver Bjorkstrand and any of these Seattle players when you're approaching your playoffs. Like they're probably all going to be, a lot of them are going to be available on the waiver wire, so you won't need to trade for them. But Bjorkstrand's the player I'm interested in there. And then for Vancouver, I was just thinking kind of in that Vince Dunn, John Carlson model, maybe Philip Hronek, right? Obviously, this guy's he's having a great season, but he's overshadowed by Quinn Hughes and the rest of the offense that's going on in Vancouver there. But, you know, Hronek himself, he has like a 60-point pace. It's crazy. Yeah, he's got he's on pace for 60 points. 5 goals and 55 assists. That's very valuable. This guy's a beefer. He hits, he blocks. So Hronek is a guy that I'm definitely looking at in Vancouver. And I think you maybe pry him away from his fantasy managers because he's most likely like a third or fourth defenseman on that team. So that those are my picks there. But yeah, I think the key is to look for players that are realistically gettable.
Yep, I would agree with that 100%. Got to move on. Curl Fuffle says, we talked about this in the Discord channel Skater Projections, but I would be curious to hear more about your process using underlying metrics with forwards versus your process analyzing defensemen. So yeah, with defensemen, with forwards, it's pretty much, you know, you hear us talk about this all the time. We're talking about luck metrics. We're talking about the chance generation metrics, both the on-ice numbers and the individual numbers. Give a little more weight to the individual numbers because obviously the team context can vary depending on your spot in the lineup and who you're playing with on any given night. And the, you know, if there's a coaching change, if they decide to adopt a more defensive structure, all these kinds of things can really affect the player's situation. But what we really want to focus on is trying to get a true evaluation of the player's talent. But what I would say for defensemen relative to that is that it's much more dependent on the team around them. Defensemen in the NHL are just not driving the play 99% of the time. You know, you do have your Cale Makars, you have your Quinn Hughes, you have your Erik Karlssons, you have these guys who are able to, you know, skate the puck unbelievably and actually become kind of like that fourth forward in a lot of these situations, even at even strength. But those are few and far between. For the most part, a lot of these defensemen are far more dependent on the team. So that does factor into my analysis, and it does make me look into the on-ice stats a little bit more for the defensemen than I do for the forwards. I also place a little bit more emphasis on shot attempts rather than individual scoring chances for per 60 when looking at defensemen, because simply put, the defensemen just aren't often asked to be in positions where they're getting scoring chances. They're often, their shots are coming from the blue line, and I don't want to penalize them for that. And some defensemen in the system that they're in, they're just really not allowed to jump down into those scoring chance areas all that much. So I don't want to penalize them just when evaluating talent based on these metrics. Obviously, that's a consideration. If the system is not allowing them to play offensively, then that is a consideration. And I would say that individual scoring chances for the guys at the high end of that, like the Dougie Hamiltons, the Roman Josis of the world, the guys that are at the high end of that, they are really extremely talented players. So the high end is really valuable, but it's not I would say it's like not necessarily a strike for me if they don't have an extremely high individual scoring chance for rate. I would also say that I just have to place a lot more emphasis on deployment versus the metrics. We talk about, you know, we talk about the deployment, we talk about the metrics, we talk about the luck metrics. We put this all together and try to come out with some sort of synthesized evaluation of the player and their potential for the next little bit, for the rest of the season, all these things. For the defensemen, I place a lot more emphasis on that deployment because they are so much more dependent on the team. So are they on the top power play? You know, 95% of the best fantasy defensemen are going to be on the top power play for their team. And are they getting those top pair of minutes, those 21, 22 plus minutes a night? That's really what's going to drive a lot of defensemen stats. You got anything to add there, Blake?
Jeez. I mean, this is must listen stuff, people. All right. This is why Nate does what he does. All right. This is, I learn when I hear about stuff like this, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I love that. My main thing is the emphasis on deployment, right? Power play one, top pair. Like, you can find yourselves getting forwards who are playing on the second or third line, you know, guys like Mason Marchman or you know, Matt Duchesne. What's that, Duchesne? But, you know, like, if you're picking up defensemen who are on the third pair or the second pair, like power play two, that doesn't feel good, you know? So, yeah, you need these guys who are getting, like, beaucoup deployment. So that's where I'm at. But, yeah, I mean, I love your bit about the Corsi four and the scoring chances four. That's really strong stuff.
All right, let's keep rolling. Hard Day's Night. Does your streaming strategy change based on the type of league, points versus categories? More often, would you wait on category changes to see how things are working out, or in either format, better to grab one to two players, assuming four moves early for more games played, and then adjust if needed? In a lot of cases, I am using one to two moves right away the first day of the week, staying up till 3 a.m. or setting an alarm for 3 a.m. as the case may be. to make sure that I get the players that I'm going for, making sure that
you
I
do
get Blake to the waiver wire. It's not that hard, but I do still make sure that I do it.
But, it'd be nice to be in three leagues, Nate. All right.
But in general, the question, you know, between points and categories league, I am much more likely to wait in categories leagues to see, especially how the first two heavy nights pan out, usually Tuesday and Thursday. Particularly, you know, if the week has good Friday, Sunday options where you have multiple teams playing Friday, Sunday, avoiding the heavy Saturday night, or if the Saturday itself is a lighter night and you can fit somebody in on a Saturday, then obviously your options open up for the weekend. I am more likely to wait in Cats leagues to see what categories I need to be chasing or need to be punting, and kind of make my last minute ads or end of the week ads based on that. It is still dependent on the quality of players available. Like, I mean, if there's three guys on the wire that I think absolutely should not be on any waiver wire in a Bangers Cats league and they're sitting there for me, then yeah, I still would go out and grab those guys and just chalk it up to a 1 week thing. And it also depends, you know, how bad last week's streamers, if their schedule is terrible for this week, then it becomes much more of a priority to drop them. If they have a decent schedule and they're actually fitting into my lineup, at least for a couple games, or they have, like, you know, we talk about sometimes they have the Monday off night to start the week, so you don't drop them right away on Monday. You wait for a bit and kind of use them as a as an extended stream in that sense. In terms of goalies and categories, I'm really just trying to find like three volume goalies and ride them as long as they're getting that volume. Just try to win the volume categories in a lot of cases and trying to pray that I win save percentage and goals against average more often than not. I wish I had better analysis than that, but that's quite honestly what I'm doing in a lot of cases. In points, I'm much more likely to move between goaltenders, but I'm still not streaming goaltenders. I talked about this framework in the move of the week back on episode 245. So if you want to check that out, you definitely should. But I think there's this misnomer around Zero G that you're like using single game streams of goalies. I basically never single game stream goaltenders unless it's on a Sunday night and it's my best chance to rack up a bunch of points to win a league or to, you know, swing a category. But I almost never am single game streaming goaltenders. I think that's really bad process in general to be single game streaming goaltenders unless it's to affect a matchup on Sunday. So anyway, I could get into that more, but I'll kick it over to you, Blake. What do you got?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with all of that, especially the goalie part. Like, you know, we put so much effort and intention into what we do here at Apples and Genos, but then when it comes to goalies, we're like, just get a guy that plays a lot, you know what I mean? And hope for the best, right? Like, that's kind of what we do, and that's what I do too. And, you know, we look into team metrics, right? And Nate and I have talked too. We'd like to do like a team metrics kind of, you know, rundown on how we sort of value players and how that can affect the goalies and stuff. But, you know, I have a process to pick goalies and draft goalies, but yeah, that's what I'm looking for when I use goalie ads as well. It's like someone who plays for a good team, right, with a decent environment and who's going to get starts, right? And I do find myself punting goalie stats a lot, to be honest. Like sometimes I just don't care. But yeah, like you said too about single game streams, I'll do that on Sunday. I don't find myself doing that at all either. But one thing I did want to add to what you said as well, like in terms of streaming strategies, like it depends on the type of streaming week that you have, like the schedule, mm-hmm. right? Like this week coming up after this All-Star week here, if you know the heavy nights are crazy heavy, right, where you can't get any streamers in, and the light nights have like two games on them, right? So when you got a week like that, I am more likely to use more moves at the start of the week to try and just maximize those games played right away. Because if you wait to use those moves, the waiver wires are going to be bone dry, right? So that's something that I tend to do there. And then just in general, I usually try and draft, like in category leagues, I usually just try and draft players that are all around players, right? I very rarely go for guys like Robert Thomas, you know, or like even Quinn Hughes, right? He obviously had a major step this year in his shot totals, but like he's a defenseman that doesn't hit and doesn't really block either. You know what I mean? So I find myself avoiding players like that in the category league. So because I don't like to chase stats, I find that I'm reacting more than I'm being proactive, and I find more success when I'm being proactive, right? When I'm focusing on myself and my process. And then, you know, like you said, if you have to chase a stat, you do it on the weekend. You save an ad or save two ads for the back half of your week, and you can maybe get some guys in there. But more often than not, I'm just kind of focusing on my process and making sure that I have good players and, you know, making good trades. But yeah, in a nutshell, there's no right answer. There's no exact answer on how to do streaming strategies. You have to be adaptable, and it changes all the time, doesn't it, Nate?
Yeah, it does change all the time for sure. And staying liquid with it is very, yep, very important for sure. Keep Rolling Wick says, what's a decent offer for Marchessault and keep two owners in last? I want to optimize those off nights. Honestly, unless you know that there's like competing offers here, I just want to open the conversation. I would, you know, send a seventh round pick and say, hey, what's your thoughts on Marchessault? I'm assuming Marchessault is not somebody that they're looking at keeping for next year. I would assume they have a couple of guys that they have that are higher up than Marchessault, and so they might be willing to part with Marchessault for really anything of value. So I'd throw out the seventh and open the conversation. If you got a way to send them a DM, then I'd do that as well and say, hey, got some interest in Marchessault. What do you think? And see what they say from there. I think, you know, there's a lot of guys you don't need to specifically tie yourself to Marchessault. So don't get too locked in on any one player and like feel like you have to overpay to get that guy. Marchessault is a great target. Don't get me wrong if he's got a good schedule in the playoffs for you. But yeah, kind of give yourself the most options possible. Give yourself the most outs. Send out a bunch of offers across a lot of spots and see what you can get done. You might surprise yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have much to add to that other than, you know, it depends on your format as well, sure, right? Like Marchessault in Kakupfel, he's ranked 37th overall. Like, you know, I don't know if a seventh is going to do it for a guy that's showing ranked 37th overall, even though if you don't look at the ranking and you're like seventh for Marchessault, yeah, that sounds all right, right? But I mean, in Kakupfel, he's ranked pretty high. So it might be hard to prime away for something like that if that's his ranking. So to your point though, too, Nate, like throw out a bunch of offers. Don't get you know, tunnel vision on one player. So a lot of people do that. They're like, should I go pick up so-and-so? It's like, well, maybe. Does it work for your team? Right.
Yeah.
What do you have to give up to get that player? Who's your drop? What's, you know, there's so many factors, right? If there was just one solid answer, we would be giving it to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause we want you to win, but yeah. So don't get tunnel vision. Marchessault, like you said, is a great target, but throw out a bunch of offers for players in and around that, right? Like, you know, with the same kind of idea that Nate and I were talking about earlier with those players with good playoff schedules, like guys that are realistically gettable, right? Mm-hmm. If you can't get Marchessault, can you, you know, is Chandler Stephenson on the wire? Like, I'm not saying it's a comparable player, but like you can make those things up in other ways, right? You don't have to give up the farm to get a player that you think is going to do well. And then he gets injured, like, you know, two games into his tenure with your team. So there you go.
For sure. Got to keep going. Nestle Swolehouse, great Discord username there. My playoffs run weeks 21 through 23. Currently in second place, have clinched a playoff spot. Looking at possibly moving Stamkos since he only has two games in both weeks 21 and 22. Looking for some insight on players I could target. So I did a quick dive into this and looks like Arizona, Anaheim, St. Louis have pretty solid schedules through those weeks. So guys from those teams that I'd be interested in, Clayton Keller, Troy Terry, as I mentioned, Frank Vetrano could be another one. Jordan Kyrou, Pavel Buchnevich from St. Louis. I don't know if any of these guys, maybe Keller, I would move Stamkos straight up for if that schedule is that good. And I mean, if you do it before next week rolls around with that perfect schedule for Arizona next week, that could be a boost for next week as well. But what I would say is these are the kind of guys and the teams that you might want to be looking at. So maybe there's more pieces around this. Maybe it's not just a one-for-one deal here, but these are the kind of guys that I think could give you a little bit of a boost from teams that are going to play a lot of games and give you some off nights through those weeks. Steve Gets It Done asks, can Blake start referring to Pia Suter as the young Pope? What do you have, Blake?
Consider it done. All right. Pius. Is that what we're going with? The young Pope. All right. You know what? I live in Vancouver. I watch the Vancouver Canucks. Commentators say his name differently. I thought it was Pius. I don't know. But from now on, he's the young Pope. All right. So everyone, that's how we're doing it. Thank you. Steve Gets It Done for your service.
Absolutely. Another thing that we would like to thank our listeners for their service on would be a like and subscribe on YouTube or a rate and review on the podcast. We do appreciate all of them. We've been kicking butt this year for sure in all of those metrics, all of those underlying metrics that we like to look at for the podcast here. So we would appreciate it if you haven't done so already. If you could take a second and go do that, we would greatly appreciate that. If you haven't joined the Apples and Geos Discord server, you want to get a look at the document we're referring to about the playoff schedules. Definitely get your buns and your biscuits in there and take a look at that. Let's keep rolling, Blake. We got to get through as many of these as we humanly possibly can. Just Heather 3012 asks, thoughts on rest of season rank, Evan Bouchard, Brock Faber, Zach Werenski. Kick it to you, Blake.
You got to go Big Boosh, ZW, and Brock Jockshalock. You got to do it. I mean, it makes total sense, right? I'd love to put Werenski over Bouchard, but no one can do that, unfortunately. This guy's he's locked and loaded on that top PP unit over in Edmonton.
Yeah, that's definitely one way to say it. I do agree, though, with the ranking. Evan Bouchard has to be at the top for me. Werenski could challenge him in an alternate universe where Columbus is actually good at hockey and they have a different coach, but unfortunately they don't. Brock Faber has had a really nice run. I do question the long-term sustainability of what he's been able to do so far. Definitely he's getting the minutes to be very valuable, but that gives me a slight edge. I'd say Bouchard is definitely a tier up, and then Werenski and Faber are probably close to about the same tier for me. Mark Barber, our own writer, 18 Skaters, asked for thoughts on Jurij Slakovsky. Just added him in the goals only 18 Skaters League as his fourth left wing, dropping Warren Fogel. I have a feeling that he's on the rise. Blake, I have to kick it to you. What are your thoughts on dropping McLovin for the Slav?
Well, you know what? If it was anybody other than Mark Barber, I'd be like, get that garbage out of here. But Mark is doing that? All right, now I have to think about it. I mean, this is a sharp guy, but damn. No, I don't think I'd be dropping Warren Fogel with his deployment for Slavkovsky. I mean, you know, if you look at his metrics on the year, this guy's 414th in the NHL in shots on goal per 60. You got to shoot the score, kid. All right. I mean, if, you know, it's like golf. Lower is better. All right. So, no, this show ain't no good. But, I mean, I think – if it's a dynasty league, you know, sure. Yeah, go grab yourself some Slavkovsky, but that's not a player I'm interested in at all. But if Mark is interested in him, I don't know. Like, what is he doing? Is he using the sports almanac from Back to the Future 2? And does he know something that we don't? Because now I have to look, now I have to dig deeper into this kid. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, that's it's a fair question to ask. Mark's definitely one of the sharper guys around. But yeah, I'm not in on Slavkovsky. Like, he's been getting tons of minutes. He's been getting great deployment, getting used up the lineup on the Suzuki Caulfield line, on the top power play. In the last game, they actually did take him off the line. Josh Anderson was up there with Suzuki and Caulfield, for whatever that's worth. But this is the last few games for Slavkovsky from the 15th through the 27th. He had a goal and 6 shots in the game against Colorado on the 15th. Then he had 5 total shots in the next 5 games, and then he had 5 shots and a goal in the last game before the All-Star break against Pittsburgh. So your guess is as good as mine what he might do in any given game. But yeah, if you look at the stats on the season, if you look at the stats the last 5 games, like, nothing is going good here. It's a terrible team. It's not like there's great hope for the teammates around him to just completely raise his stock. I guess if you're on the top line and top power play and you're entrenched there, then sure. But he's already off the top line last little bit. If he gets off the top power play, he could be completely useless. Fogel's back on the Draisaitl line, so I'm actually kind of back in on Fogel. As long as Fogel's attached to McDavid and or Draisaitl, I'll be in on Warren Fogel. I can't quit McLovin. So that's my thoughts there. I do think that, you know, a lot of the making fun of Slavkovsky is well overblown. This is a 19-year-old kid in his second year in the NHL already. And yeah, I think he's got loads of time to figure things out. Look at what Quentin Byfield has done after doing not much of anything his first 2 years. So I'm definitely not writing off Slavkovsky, but I don't think that he's going to be a significant factor for the rest of the season. All right. Mark actually had another question. He said, here's a strategy question for you. Is it a good idea to run a boom bust cycle in keeper leagues like our experts league? That is, go for it 1 year by trading away future picks for win now players and then tank the next year by trading away players in exchange for future picks. The alternative is what he's currently doing, which is to be a so-so team that hopefully gets hot in the playoffs, knocks off some teams with quote unquote better rosters. This reminds of some comments I've heard coming out of Carolina. They want to be competitive every year. Playoffs are hugely influenced by luck. I kind of prefer the boom bust approach, even though I'm not currently following it. So full transparency, I've kind of used the boom bust. I won the league last year. I traded a bunch of future picks in order to get a good team, and it worked out. It was a close thing. It was definitely some good luck that contributed to me taking home the championship there. But I'm paying for it this year, and I've already started to trade away some stuff for future picks, including trading away Zibanejad to you, Blake, for some future picks for next year. So, I'm clearly on the boom bust side of this. I think that, you know, if you're good enough to consistently have like a top four team against your competition, regardless of how hard they sell out every single year, then maybe. But I mean, if you're facing multiple teams every year that are selling every pick from next year's draft to compete this year, you're really facing an uphill battle because you're never on equal terms with the teams that you're playing against. It's just different teams. You know, it's these two managers this year, it's next year, it's the other two managers. And then the next year, the previous two managers come back, and they're always just going to have the odds stacked in their favor. And there's going to be multiple of them against you, which is the key component there. It's not just that you're facing one team that's quote unquote stacked and, you know, you can get lucky and beat that team in any given week, but you're facing multiple teams that are a little bit stacked, and that's pretty hard to just run the table and beat everybody in that kind of scenario. And I do think that the boom bust kind of thing, you can kind of double dip in a way. Like, I sold all my 2023 high picks, and now I'm buying all 2024 high picks. And if it turns out really well next year and I am contending again next year, then I'll probably sell my 2025 high picks to borrow. And you're kind of just borrowing on either side, right? You're getting the best from either side of the years. Just taking the best from both years on either side of the year that you're actually competing. So you're kind of double dipping in a way every single time that you're going for it. And it can be really effective, and you can build some sort of kind of super team. I know you're in on this because you've been trading all of your picks, Blake, but do you have any extra thoughts there?
Not too much, but just in terms of fantasy hockey, I play to win, right? Like, one of my weaknesses for sure in fantasy hockey is impatience, right? And I've nipped that in the bud in redraft leagues and in keeper leagues as well. But like a full dynasty league, it's hard. It's hard for me. Like, I'm in two dynasty teams and I'm getting all these questions, all these trade offers, like, give me your good players, I'll give you picks. And I just can't pull the trigger, right? Like, because I still want to win myself. I'm like, no, I don't want to trade that player because I want to try and win, even though I don't have a chance, like you said. So this year in particular, though, yeah, if you're in contention, like, you like the NHL does it, right? Like, they look at these teams that load up. I mean, it doesn't always work. Like Nate said, there's a luck element here, but I'm trying to put everything on my side so I can win, right? Because there's nothing better than the glory of winning a fantasy hockey championship against your buddies. Oh, it's the best. So I'm all about boom or bust. You can always, like, I trust my drafting as well. And I know you do, Nate. Like, I feel like I can draft a competitive team no matter what picks I'm getting, you know. Is it going to be good enough to win? No, probably not when these players or teams are loading up, right? But, you know, I can have fun, right? And that's all I need to do.
Fair enough. So flipping over now, we got a bunch of things from Twitter. So at Kessel_KD_Killa, auction draft strategy. Do you prefer studs and duds or more balanced approach to drafting? Blake, do you have any experience in the auction drafting realm?
Actually, I don't. So I'm curious to hearing about this. I've never done an auction draft. I've done a full, salary cap league, but auction draft, no, I've never done that. And I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this.
Yeah, so I'd say that I've seen both strategies work. So studs and duds, for context, is basically just blowing all of your budget on, you know, like getting McDavid, McKinnon, and Pasternak, and then like nothing else basically for the rest of the draft. It doesn't have to be quite that extreme, but you get the idea. You're paying up for a few really high-end superstar level players, and then just trying to fill in as best you can around them with a bunch of like what would be like 15th rounders in your normal fantasy hockey snake draft. I would say that against poor competition, studs and duds is 100% the way to go, because you figure you're going to be able to pick up the right guys and fill in around those studs a lot easier against poor competition. And so just overpay for the studs, get those guys who are absolutely going to win you championships on their own, get a couple of those guys, and then just work the waiver wire all season long. Maybe it takes you a few weeks, but you figure you're that much better than your competition, you can definitely find those players on the waiver wire and get that done. The better the competition is, the more you have to just kind of be water, know the values of the players, and take what the draft gives. I think both can work. I think if people are all just a little bit leery of overspending on top end players, then you can take advantage and you can kind of do maybe not a full studs and duds where it's just like four top end guys and then nothing else for the rest of the draft, but something a little bit along those lines where maybe you do have that McKinnon McDavid stack at the top, and then you're kind of filling in with some more like middle round guys around that a little bit more, if that's just what the room is giving you, right? But if the room is still paying up for the top guys, and the tougher the competition is, the more accurate all these values are going to be, and the more tighter to your values they're probably going to be. And you just kind of have to take it on a player-by-player basis in most cases. And just see what you can get. But definitely, I would say don't be in a place where you have a bunch of money left at the end of the draft. That's the worst place to be, where you're just giving away free value. I'd rather overpay in a couple spots for a couple players that I truly believe in than get to the end of the draft and think, man, I really messed this up because I've still got $15 of my $200 budget left here, and everybody else just already has that, you know, whatever that is, 7.5% advantage on me from the get-go. So that's what I'd say on that. Moving over to at ZG999999, goalies to target for trade deadline. My answer to this is no, don't trade for goalies. Your thoughts, Blake?
Oh my God, such a party pooper. This guy's actually a buddy of mine. Well, like an internet buddy. He was with me when I was with my original podcast. This is one of my OGs. So buddy, I got some answers for you. All right, big time. Shout out to you. I do think that Anderson could be a good stash, especially like Freddie Anderson, especially if you can add straight to the IR, right? If he's out on your wire, or, you know, if you could trade for him even, I wouldn't give up a ton, but you know, it's a nice little stash because he could walk directly into a number one spot on a good defensive environment. Right. So that's a piece there. Elvis Merzlikins as well, I think, if he gets traded. And I think there's potential that he could, right. He's, you know, the marriage there between himself and Pascal Vincent. Vincent's probably going to be forever alone, as we all know, but, Merzlikins, no, he's a good man. So yeah, head on over wherever he goes. I'm interested because I think he is a good goalie. I wrote something else here. Any goaltender that gets traded to LA, maybe at the deadline, that's a goaltender I'm very interested in. So, that's really it. That's kind of what I'm looking at. Obviously, I think there's still plenty of options on the wire. You can pick up guys, you can trade for lesser goalies. So yeah, that's it. Go get some of these beauties.
For sure. At John Weinberg 99, can you rank Nyquist, Schenn, Atkinson? So the way that I did this is I do have Atkinson at the top at the moment. Has been hot as of late, 6 points his last five. Obviously has good underlying stats, as we've mentioned before, 41st in the league in shots per 60 on the season. Then I have Nyquist, then I have Schenn. I'm a little bit worried about Gustav Nyquist. Just taking a look at the standings, if things go south for the Nashville Predators more than they have already, and I mean, this is a team with a -7 goal differential on the season. They're currently outside of a playoff spot. You know, if they do decide to become sellers, then Gus Nyquist becomes a really obvious sell candidate in my mind, given the season that he's had. Just some team looking for some middle six scoring, Gus Nyquist definitely fits that bill. So I'm a little bit worried that he just goes to some team and now he's not on the top power play. He's getting middle 6 minutes and he's just completely worthless for fantasy. A little bit worried about that. Breeden Shen is just going to be one of those guys who's up and down. We've talked about him. He's one of those guys who can absolutely pop off for a good streamer week, and we like him when St. Louis does have a good streaming week, but it's not somebody that I want to be relying on. I think Atkinson is probably going to be the most consistent, but I'm not sure I love the upside or ceiling of any of these guys. Your thoughts, Blake?
Yep. Yeah, I'll buy that with Nyquist. I think in a bubble, I would go Nyquist, Atkinson, and then Shen. But yeah, I mean, you know, taking into account he could be moved and he'll probably lose value if he does, unless he's Sean Monahan. And then he gets, then he pops the hell off on line two, power play one, and Nikolai Ehlers, buddy. Oh my God. But yeah, I think I like Nyquist's situation a lot better than Atkinson. He's power play one, where Atkinson's power play two. But yeah, metrics go to Atkinson. But yeah, take it for what it's worth. Like if you're buying what Nate's selling, which makes total sense, then I'd go his way.
Fair enough. At Curtis T. Wright, worth dropping Talbot at this point. These guys are available. Send a screenshot. Basically, it's Tristan Jarry, Jordan Binnington, Jacob Markstrom, Philip Gustafson, Ilya Samsonov. Yeah, we've been saying for a while, Cam Talbot, absolutely worth dropping. Any goaltender that's, you know, losing starts, playing terribly, any of the above, I'm absolutely going to drop them. Yeah, after like, I don't know, 3-4 games of Talbot not performing, I was ready to drop him. I didn't actually have Talbot anywhere, so I don't have any real life experience to draw this from, but I'm not tied to any goaltender, no matter how well they've played in the early going. So Talbot, absolutely a drop at this point. Which one of these guys would you be interested in, Blake? Is there one that sticks out to you from that list that he provided?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. You know, Binnington has actually been really good this year. It's weird. But I don't know. I'm not in on St. Louis. I can't. But, you know, should I be? I don't know. I would probably take Binnington there. To be honest, I like all five of those goalies over Cam Talbot. You know, but I would say Binnington. I have Markstrom in three spots. I have Gus in two spots. Yeah. I mean, and Samsonov's getting the start on Monday. That was just confirmed. So he could be a real option moving forward. Like, the Leafs can't go with Martin Jones, can they, Nate?
No, they cannot. Let's keep rolling. At the Decimated D, Cat League strategy. How many Perifs only guys would you recommend as a general guideline? Obviously depends on the team, but I am curious what you guys do. So I have a direct correlation for this in one of my leagues, Bangers Cats Leagues. It's actually the Apples and Genos Patron League. For a lot of the season, what I've actually been doing, four bench spots, it's pretty standard stuff, four bench spots. And what I've been doing for a lot of the season here is actually running six defensemen with two Perifs only streamers. And we have hits and blocks as part of our categories. It's two out of the six skater categories. And I just slammed the hits and blocks every single week. Yeah. And if you stream well, and you can always find these guys out there, right? It's the easiest thing to stream, I find. And if you have like a decent core of points producing players, there's some variance there, but you're going to win those categories just as often as not, as long as you're drafted pretty well. And so I've been doing that. I've been having two bangers only streamers, basically, hits and blocks both. And then I've been having one goaltender, as I mentioned, three goalies, just trying to rack up as many saves basically as possible, saves and wins. And then I'm saving that extra spot. Might not be actually a streamer spot. Might only have the two streamer spots on any given week. But if I have the extra streamer spot, then using that for, you know, somebody who can give me some points or to target at the end of the week, any specific category, shots or power play points or something like that at the end of the week if I need to. That's the way that I've been doing it. Any thoughts, Blake?
Yep. Just at the very basic level, to me, Perifs are the easiest thing to get on the wire. So these guys come out of the woodworks, guys like Kyle Burrows on San Jose. You can literally pick that guy up. He's on the wire, like 1% rostered. You can get him in, get your hits and blocks there. Nate, who's your favorite beefer streamer? Do you have any beefer streamers with benefits?
Has to be Braden McNabb this year. I picked him up early in the year, and I held him the entire season because he's just that good. Yeah, it's been awesome. He was, I'm going to say he was like 10% rostered out of the drafts, and now he's up to like 50% rostered because he's just been dominant in terms of hits and blocks this year. So definitely got to be Braden McNabb for me.
There you go, buddy.
All right, last question. We made it to the end. At Mango Snapple T on Twitter says, as the originator of the 0G draft strategy, what's your approach in leagues that are goalie heavy? Examples being they have more goalie categories, earns more points, more min number of appearances, goalies are being drafted early. Do you prefer to avoid these leagues altogether? First off, yeah, I do avoid leagues like that. I would never willingly partake in a league that just emphasizes goaltenders to that extent. The way that I think about it is, why would you willingly be in a league that intentionally increases variance by way of overvaluing the goaltender position? Like, even the people who are 0G skeptics at this point, which I think I said in a recent podcast, you're kind of telling on yourself at this point, just especially with this season. Like, it's been so obvious how valuable the 0G strategy can be. But even the people who are skeptics, they'll all still say, like, goaltenders are kind of voodoo, right? Like, everybody, it's a common saying. It's just said around the league, even like in NHL circles, not just fantasy circles. And so why you would want to be in a league that just like overvalues that variance, like all the people who thought they were set with Cam Talbot and then he just disintegrates into nothingness before our eyes, gets Thanos snapped and he's nothing now. Like, why would you want to be in a league where that just like totally submarines your entire season? That's just not fun to me. So I'm never going to be in a league like that. If you are in a league like that, what I would say is that the goalie weight being high, like the amount of points that they're scoring, or if there's a ton of categories assigned to goaltenders, if that's high, that really doesn't improve your ability to choose the correct goaltenders in the draft or improve anything about your ability to predict goaltender performance, right? The only thing that we can control is our own strategy, our own approach. We can't control the fact that goaltenders are going to spontaneously combust in front of our eyes at any point throughout the season, in the preseason, in the offseason, and just be completely unpredictable all the time. And so what I'd say is nothing really changes for me, quite honestly. I had, again, in I think it was episode 245, I said before, I went through all of my leagues and the goaltender situations that I have right now. Like in Kakupful, it's a 14-team league. Obviously, goaltenders are going to be more valuable in a situation like that where there's just not as many of them who are getting starts. And you got to have at least some goaltenders to fill those spots or else you're just leaving points on the board. I have Connor Ingram and I have Joey Decord in Kakupful. Tier 3, really good competition. I just did that by being diligent on the waiver wire, picking up guys who had a chance to get on a run and thinking to myself, what if this works out? And I didn't go out of my way to do it. I wasn't picking them up on a whim. I was picking them up when they clearly had two games to play that week and there was a reason to pick them up. And you can get into these situations. Those guys are 6th and 7th in Kakupful scoring for goaltenders on the season, and I picked them up off the waiver wire. Goaltender weight being high does not improve your ability to predict their performance. And so the way that you should approach goaltenders should not change based on the scoring settings, in my opinion. There's obviously going to be somebody's going to come back with their league where they only have like two ads for the entire season and like all this, right? Like, of course, there are exceptions to every rule, but in the vast, vast majority of leagues, commonplace, normal settings that most of us are playing in, that's going to be the case. You got anything to add, Blake?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much else to say besides, if you play in these leagues, it's basically like what we're doing here with the podcast is giving you strategies, right? If you're playing in those leagues, you're playing in a league where there's less strategy involved and more luck. You might as well go to the slot machines and just click that down, right? Like, why would you do that? So I agree with everything you said. I mean, 0G is the way. I'm sorry, folks, but it is.
All right. Well, that's all we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's going to be it, folks. Much love.